Okay, great. Josh? Awesome. Thank you so much for speaking with me. So I wanted to start by just asking you a little bit about, if you could just kind of introduce yourself a little bit.
Sure. So I'm Josh. I started Baremetrics about 6 years ago. It's a revenue analytics platform, but I've been an entrepreneur for, I don't know, 15 years. A lot longer if go back to like childhood. But yeah, that's I basically just make stuff for a living.
That's awesome. I can relate to that. So, and that's cool that you described Baremetrics as a revenue analytics platform. I was, interested in what you might describe it as. Some might say, a dashboard. It really is, from what I understand, a more extensive dashboard for your business. Is that kind of correct?
Yeah, and that's like one of those things that's sort of ever expanding. I think, when I started Baremetrics back in 2013, the landscape was very different, and sort of this dashboard of numbers would, that solved a pretty big need because it was hard to get that stuff at the time. Now, we've by necessity and just by the sort of value from it, we've expanded into being more of sort of a suite of tools around helping you grow your business.
And can you tell me like what are some interesting things that you have in there? What do you like the most? What do you use the most?
Yeah, so for me, I don't really care that much about numbers in and of themselves. I care a lot more about why the numbers are what they are and then what I can do to affect those numbers. And so for me, there's, it's sort of the additional tools on top of that that I find really interesting. So, that's like the revenue recovery stuff. So around like failing charges, collected tens of thousands of dollars for our own account and hundreds of thousands of dollars for other accounts. So it's like that's helping you make more money. And then there's this other tool called Cancellation Insights, which, churn, especially for a subscription company, is sort of the bane of any subscription company's existence. And understanding why people cancel is really difficult. A lot of times people will create these spreadsheets and like try to, they'll ask people why they're canceling and you'll track all this stuff, but you don't really know what to do with it or how to like turn it into some sort of actionable data point. So we built this tool called Cancellation Insights, which collects cancellation reasons, but and it'll graph that kind of stuff. But what's more interesting to me is it will also track how much revenue you lost to a given reason. So, maybe like quantitatively, people are canceling, like you see the most sort of just hard numbers, it's like most people are canceling because of price. But maybe you're losing the most money from cancellations due to technical issues. So you should actually focus on fixing the technical issues because that's where you're losing all the money, not on changing your pricing. That kind of thing. I find that pretty interesting for us.
That's interesting. But in terms of in terms of some of these analytics, which I mean, Stripe has a dashboard. I think that's going to be like the starter dashboard for many, many companies. It's very simplistic though. I mean, it really only has a few metrics. What do you so in terms of in addition to churn, what else is there that, off the bat is going to be like widely applicable?
Is widely applicable as far as what goes.
In terms of what Baremetrics has.
Oh, sure. I mean, there's dozens upon dozens of metrics. I think, like, you mentioned sort of Stripe. I mean, so that we can take in data from, I don't know, we've probably got close to a dozen different data sources now. So Stripe is like one small piece of the pie. On top of that, it's the contextual stuff that's interesting. I mean, like, you've got monthly recurring revenue, lifetime value, growth rates, all these different things. But we've got context around that stuff too. So you can say like, what's my churn rate or the lifetime value of customers in Europe versus customers in the US? Or what's the growth rate of VC-backed companies versus, say, bootstrapped companies, or companies with 100 employees versus companies with 5 employees. So you can see all this extra context around any given number, and also break that down by plan, and, you know, date, all this kind of stuff too. That's you can't really get anywhere else.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, I'm pretty familiar with the product. Obviously not as familiar as you. And I think, you know, it's always great to hear kind of, you know, from the founder's perspective, what really is the focus, I think. And you mentioned VCs. You know, I think when I first came across Bearmetrics, I did think about, you know, this data would be useful, you know, for others. And I know, you know, I haven't kept up with it, but I know you introduced a program, sort of making, you know, your Bearmetrics information either public or, you know, kind of publicly available to a certain group of VCs or similar. Is that right?
Yeah, well, so you're talking about there's like the open startup stuff, but we had a product called Intros, which would like let you get intros to VCs
based on your metrics, right?
Correct, yeah.
And is that still around or?
No. Okay, there's a post that's got tons of details on it about how we built this thing, launched it, and then made no money from it and shut it down.
Okay.
Yeah, so that failed. I think the impetus for like wanting to do it and then the motivation to do it was well intentioned. I think it turns out VCs are cheapskates. sorry, Siri. I don't know if you ever have this problem, but Siri loves to like just all of a sudden interject herself for no reason.
Yes, it happens.
She does that. VCs are cheapskates, and they hate spending money, and they hate changing anything that they're doing because they all think they've got their own like secret sauce.
Right.
And so when you change the workflow for them, you know, you might as well just slap them in the face. It's offensive to them. So what we found was like people love the idea of getting the data, but the idea of paying for it was not going to happen. So we moved on. Would have loved for it to work, but you know.
Do you think it could have worked in reverse, where you know the startup basically pays for it, and then you know the VCs are free to look at that?
I think there were a lot of different ways we could have sort of tested to try to make it work. The problem was no company, like the way that you're, it's like the money to be gained from it was not on the company end, like having some company pay couple hundred bucks a month or something like that, which they probably wouldn't have even paid that, is kind of a hassle just to like maybe get in front of some VCs. Whereas like VCs who are spending millions of dollars on deals,
right,
have the money to do it, but like that's not part of like how I had multiple VCs who were like, we don't pay for leads, or like we don't pay for deal flow or whatever. And it's like, hey man, like if I gave you 10 new deals in the next year that were worth collectively $500 million, you're saying you won't pay for that? Nah, we don't pay for that. You know, like that kind of right. Sort of like the attitude from it was like, okay, this is an uphill battle. I could probably get some people to pay for it, but you know, like it's just not part of the fabric of like how traditional VCs work.
No, I mean, I understand. And it's just, it's a very interesting idea. I mean, you know, it's especially interesting now because I think the trend has changed. You know, before, I think we were, you know, we were getting used to, you know, splashy announcements about launch and about, you know, how much you raised. And now there is, I think, you know, a small trend into just not sharing any of that information, not being very public with, you know, metrics and things like that in the founder community. And, you know, I mean, do you see that at all? Do you see any, you know, advantages or disadvantages?
I mean, I do feel, well, okay, so anecdotally, I don't feel like, I think you're correct in that it doesn't seem like people are talking about these like hey, company, stealth company X just got $500 million in funding. I also don't pay attention to it. So maybe it still happens. I just don't read TechCrunch or any of these like startup-y kind of places. But I guess maybe people don't talk about it as much, or it's just sort of like, yeah, people got funding, sure, whatever. Like nobody really cares.
Well, you know, I mean, I'll tell you. So, I mean, what I think and kind of, you know, what I've been reading, it's not necessarily even about, you know, stealth companies in particular, but just, you know, just startups that are, you know, operating, they're live, and, you know, they, and, you know, some really great founders are finding, that it's more advantageous to, you know, not have that TechCrunch article announcing your, you know, whatever $20 million raise or what have you. You know, it's more advantageous to obviously, you know, raise the funds that they did, but not to, you know, announce it so publicly and to just kind of, you know, keep heads down and keep working on it. I mean, I do know if you do that and you're on the front page of TechCrunch, every single VC firm is, you know, partners and everything are going to reach out and say, you know, oh, great, you know, we would be interested in your next round, which it seems like a good idea for you as a founder. But I mean, I think there are also distinct advantages that people are finding in, you know, not sharing that information so widely. I mean, you know, some of the problems become expectations are higher for the company at an early stage, you know, because you're on the front page of TechCrunch, everyone knows how much you raise, things like that. At least that's what I think. And then, you know, in the case of VC specifically, and going back to, you know, the product that you guys have worked on, I mean, a lot of what I think, you know, the VC business is signal seeking, basically. So, you know, I mean, the metrics are great, but that's not actually a component of the, you know, the signal that they're looking for. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I agree with you. I think a lot of people like to play startup, and the part of that is like getting PR. And so when you see your company mentioned as part of some like funding thing, that makes you feel like you've done something meaningful.
Right.
So people do it. And I mean, okay, like I'm the first guy to like take an opportunity to turn a given event into some sort of like marketing opportunity. Right. I mean, you know, I wrote at length this past week about how I like failed to sell the company. Like I turned that into this like whole like content marketing thing. So I'm all for like taking advantage of a situation. But I think that people, especially when it comes to funding, I think what's happened is it's become so typical to read about it that it's sort of like, okay, fine, whatever. Like just people just have stopped caring on the receiving end, like reading about it. Just, it's just like white noise. And, and so I don't know, maybe people have started realizing that, so they don't talk about it as much. And I agree with you that there's additional pressure that comes from that. As well, that I think the reality is people hopefully are just becoming or realizing more that they just need to like, there's not value in just talking about somebody giving you money, that there's a lot more value in actually shipping something that makes money.
Right. No, definitely. And that is, you know, interestingly enough, that is also a trend that I see.
Is the making money part?
Right. Right. Like it's cool now to be profitable. That's what I hear. Right. And awesome that you did. Yeah. So I wanted to actually ask you about that. About, you know, your attempt to sell the company and sort of what happened. You know, what happened?
Yeah. So earlier this year, I started like fielding some offers on buying the company, which is not atypical. I mean, that happens pretty regularly. But I like at the time, like mentally I was in a bad space. I was burnt out, had lots of stuff going on personally, and like was the timing of like getting this offer sort of worked out in that I was like, okay, this would be great. Somebody gives me a few million bucks, I can be done with this sort of stressful component of life, of my life. So went down that rabbit hole. And then ultimately, like, the person, we had multiple offers, and the person I went with, or the people I went with, like, sort of long story short, just bailed, like, ghosted us, mm-hmm. At, like, you know, within a couple of weeks of when we were supposed to close. So that was, you know, all that makes me just, like, pretty angry. And and so but, you know, ultimately didn't sell the company. And, you know, we had more offers after the fact. Like, I could have salvaged some of that and sold for close to the same amount, but it was just,
right.
it just didn't make sense. Like, there's too many, at that point, it was like, whatever, 4, 5, 6 months later after that whole process, it was like, I'm kind of over it. So,
right.
Back to building the company.
Yeah. M&As, that's what I was going to ask you. M&As can take, you know, 6 months or even a lot longer in many cases. And so that's a, you know, huge time sink. I have no context of the, you know, sort of like revenue, you know, number of customers. Is any of that information public? Do you share any of that?
Which part specifically, like the around the M&A stuff?
No, around, you know, just Baremetrics and, you know, like, what is the revenue? How many customers?
Oh, yeah. So you go to demo.baremetrics.com and you see all of our stuff.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Yeah, it's
all public.
Yeah.
You know, that, I mean, definitely has some advantages as well. So that's awesome. So, what, you know, where are you going to go from here? You know, what's your next steps?
Yeah. So I'm back into growing the company. We've hired two new people in the past couple of weeks, and then we'll hire a couple more in the next few weeks, and we're just going to keep plugging away on growing the company and the product.
Well, you know, that is one question I want to ask you. Let me see. So, I don't see employees here, you know, and that is a metric of a company. You know, that's kind of can be a pretty important metric. That's not on your page, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, so that's all. The page is just around revenue. So, correct. You know, but like our about page has, you know, employees. We don't have like expenses or anything on our as part of the product.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah, I mean, these are great metrics. And I wanted to ask, you know, you did a lot of things before Baremetrics. You released a really long list. You know, can you tell me about a couple of those things?
Like projects over the past, like, you know, 15
years.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So, I started back in like the early 2000s with just making random stuff on the internet. And, you know, there's this whole, like, it's interesting where there's what's more interesting than just sort of like the specific items on the list is the themes that sort of like progress over time. So it's like the first few items were like these like link directory things. So like early 2000s, it was always like, you know, I don't know, like Photoshop tutorials, like links, some sort of directory of Photoshop tutorials, or like Flash games, or just like weird links to weird things on the internet, like just these sort of directories of things. So there's like, that starts off with like that kind of stuff, and then it transitions into like Amazon affiliate sites, which you used to be able to make some money from. And then it transitions into like some content sites. So during that time, I guess the biggest thing from that was I started this thing called the Apple blog. Sold it for like $75,000 to a tech publication called GigaOm, which went bankrupt years later, but then got restarted. So like then that transitions into sort of like this like content phase into this product phase, I would say. Like I went from like sort of hacking websites together to like, hey, maybe I can actually build software. So like 2005, 6, 7, I start like actually building software on the web. And so like that transitions into, you know, building software, which ultimately, like, really big picture here is like, I built some software, I build what became Bare Metrics because I needed the metrics that Bare Metrics provided. And then Bare Metrics took off and basically replaced the other stuff I was building.
Right. I've seen that happen. You know, that's a very similar story to a lot of founders. You know, they're kind of, you know, doing something and then they need something and they realize like, well, other companies are going to need that. I mean, you know, MailChimp is, you know, I think another example of that. And there's so many others. That's definitely, you know, a sort of fantastic way to even kind of like get started. You know, a lot of people are, you know, like they don't have an idea, so they kind of are like thinking about ideas, and it makes a ton of sense to actually just build something, and you know, and you'll kind of get more engrossed in the world, and you know, probably come across something. I know another one was Splunk, which, you know, the founder had built like 10 companies, and each time, you know, he had to deal with a lot of these like log files with servers, and you know, just all the time was like, where do I put these logs? And then, you know, eventually was like, you know, I bet more companies have this problem, and you know, let's build a solution for actually, you know, log management, and you know, and that really took off. Yep. So you got, you know, you did a lot of content marketing for Bare Metrics. I mean, that's, you know, obviously how a lot of, you know, people have heard about you. Like, I actually don't know how, you know, how long Bare Metrics has been around. I would imagine it's been a few years now. I recently came across somebody tweeting about how it would be really interesting to watch somebody live stream their, you know, they're working on a startup.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a form of content marketing, that's, you know, that, I mean, it and all the comments were about how that's, you know, it's pretty boring. But at the same time, you are getting that exposure. You know, would you sort of do anything differently? You know, if you were sort of doing it again, or you think, you know, I think you wrote many blog posts and, you know, things like that. And I actually don't know the extent of your content marketing. I'd be interested in that, but would you sort of do anything differently or do anything new?
Now? As far as like the marketing side, or?
Yes.
Or just in total, like,
well, like, I mean, if you start something new, and you know, especially when you're starting something new, content marketing is, you know, is kind of an important way to gather an audience. And you know, the ways that you can go about that. I mean, obviously, you know, some startups can just do paid marketing, for instance. And some startups can do, you know, like content marketing or like video marketing or podcasting. You know, I mean, there's a ton of different ways. So I wanted to ask you sort of what would you, and you did blogging, right?
Yeah, I don't know that I'd do anything different. I mean, to me, the type of marketing that you do, especially in the early days, is just a reflection of your skill set, right? So I can write, and I find it kind of therapeutic to write and sort of get my thoughts out. So that worked really well. If I had been had some like deep history in creating videos, then that would probably be what I would do. It's just sort of like what is easiest, and especially in the early days, cheapest thing to do. And in this case, it's just the content stuff happened to be sort of in my wheelhouse. And so I don't think I would do anything different, but it's not to say that I think that was necessarily the best way. It was just the best given the resources I had at the time.
So what would be, you know, the best way now if you had more resources?
I mean, I don't know. for us specifically, I don't know that there was anything like, you know, we, in addition to the content stuff, we played the sort of open startup card really hard and got other companies to make their stuff public too, along with us. And so like that was a sort of this form of content marketing. And I feel like it worked really well for us because it sort of poked through the noise of typical startup marketing. And I think that's a really great way, but like, I don't, you know, I can't say like every startup should do this. But you know, I'm happy with sort of the way that we started off on the marketing side.
Okay, great. And do you have any, you know, any like learning lessons or learned lessons, you know, any obvious failures that you, you know, sort of worked on and in hindsight, you know, it was pretty obvious or, you know, any.
I think that this is sort of the problem with like a lot of VC-backed companies. I mean, so we had ultimately 800,000 in funding that we took on, and I think what I would do differently is not spend money as fast. Okay. So that came back to bite us, but you know, and really it's the kind of thing that like puts lots of companies out of business completely or like forces some sort of acquisition. And we narrowly avoided it, but I think, you know, in hindsight, I wish we had not spent so much money on trying to grow.
Can you go into more detail about, you know, what exactly you spent too much money on or how fast?
We spent the lion's share of it on hiring, and so we just hired too fast for the amount of money that we took on. So, and didn't grow fast enough to sort of offset that. So we were, you know, we burned money too fast and almost ran out, and then managed to like squeeze by and get profitable.
Okay, good. Yeah, I mean, you know, that is something I want to ask you about, because you were talking about, you know, you look at your analytics, you look at your churn. But I do have a quick question for you. So, you know, Bezos says, he said, you know, a few times, I really don't look at the next quarter in terms of like stock performance or, you know, company performance for Amazon, for instance, because that, you know, that quarter was pretty much determined like two or three or several quarters ago, you know.
Yep.
I'm currently working on, you know, like several quarters out. And that, I mean, you know, that is something that makes a lot of sense. I mean, when you, you know, think about, I'm working on something right now. It really probably takes like a few quarters for sort of that to culminate. And, you know, so do you agree with that? I feel like these indicators are almost like just lagging indicators, you know, like revenue is a lagging indicator.
Yes. I mean, all metrics are lagging on some level. And it's not, I think it depends on the role of like the importance that it should play. So, for instance, like I don't really care about our numbers in a like given day. I care about like on a monthly basis, like let me see how things have gone. And I care about like forecasting the next few months. But you know, it's not beneficial for me to obsess over the sort of daily fluctuations of any given metric. So I don't really pay attention to them. But there are people for who like that makes sense for them to obsess over that, 'cause like that's part of their job. But you know, I think it just depends. Like in sort of my sort of CEO role, I am much more in line with the like, let's plan out what's happening in a year from now and sort of work our way backwards and figure out how to fill in the gap so that we hit that goal or something like that. So, yes, that's generally how I view things.
Awesome. Okay, I think we're out of time. So, you know, do you have any closing anything you'd like to say or ask?
I mean, I don't know that I have anything specific, unless there's like one closing question you've got.
No, I mean, I think that's it. I really appreciated the time. It was great speaking with you. I look forward to what you know, what's in the future for Barometrics.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks for chatting. It was fun.
Thank you. All right. Have a good one.
You too, man.